Did you know that right now,
anyone in Wisconsin can receive an at-home COVID-19 test through the State Department of Health Services? It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent. And I'd like to hear from you this morning if you've already taken advantage of this at-home test. How is the whole experience for you? And how are you? 1-800-642-1234 is a number to our show. You can always email us ideas at WPR.org. And the epidemiologists are unanimous about containing this pandemic through testing and tracing until vaccinations can become the norm, which is why our guest this morning is Tracy DeSalvo. She's the surveillance lead of the COVID-19 response team and acting director of the Bureau of Communicable Diseases. Tracy, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Lee.
How can I get my hand on this at-home COVID-19 test?
The great news about this at-home test is that you can actually go online and order one for yourself. A couple ways to do that. You can go directly to the company's webpage, or you can go through our website, dhs.wisconsin.gov. And if you click on COVID-19 and then getting tested, we have all the information there for you to order that test yourself.
What's the charge, Tracy?
There's no charge for this. The test is free for everyone. We're going to submit that test to your insurance first. And if your health insurance doesn't cover the cost of the test, then the state of Wisconsin is going to pay for the cost of that testing.
Okay. And what's included in these at-home testing kits? When you go to your website from the Department of Health Services and you click on the COVID link and you go to request the COVID testing kit, what arrives in the mail?
Sure. So you're going to get a collection kit that has everything you need to do that specimen collection. And it's a really easy collection process. You actually will do a Zoom call with a provider through Vault, which is the testing company. And you're going to collect some saliva. They need to collect about a tablespoon of your saliva to do that test. And you drop it into a UPS Dropbox. They have to be returned using UPS. And then those results come back to you by email.
So there is, when you order this test, there is some responsibility for, there is a process you will have to go through. And it sounds like telehealth would be part of it, or a virtual Zoom call is a part of it, to help you make sure that the sample is collected correctly. And what will that mean with a tablespoon of saliva? And how do we collect these samples correctly? What's our responsibility once we get these kits, Tracy?
Sure. So, you're going to do a telemedicine visit, essentially, with a provider from Vault, and they're actually going to walk you through the process. So they'll have a collection tube that you're going to put your saliva in, and they will walk you through that process directly. So it's really, really very simple, and we want to make this as easy for people as possible and really provide the opportunity to have that at-home testing available.
What would I need to do in order to prepare for taking this test, if anything?
The kit will come with specific instructions, and it may include things like don't eat or drink for a set amount of time before collecting that saliva specimen, but it's really going to be a pretty straightforward collection process.
Tracy DeSalvo, our guest, she's the surveillance lead of the COVID-19 response team at the Wisconsin Department of Health. And Tracy, then, following this sample after it's taken, it has to be dropped off, at a UPS location the same day it's collected. And then where does it go? Where are these results being processed?
Yep, it's going to go to a lab through Vault Health, and they're going to do the specimen testing and get you your results back via email. And the great news about this is it's a really efficient process. It takes about 2 days from when you collect that specimen to getting the results. So it's going to be really quick. The turnaround time in the lab is only about a half day. So we have a great turnaround to get those results quickly to residents of Wisconsin.
I think the first stories I saw of this at-home free testing kit made available through the state of Wisconsin was right before Christmas at the end of last year. How have these tests been so far? Are we getting enough out to the people? Have we gotten the word out to date? Do enough people know about them?
Well, we're certainly glad to be getting the word out and to have more people know that this is available as one of the testing options. This is really a nice supplement to the other testing options that are available in Wisconsin, including getting tested through your provider or going to one of our community testing sites. And to date, we've had more than 12,000 people who've ordered kits, and we've had almost 1,600 of those kits returned. And, you know, the nice thing about these kits, and one of the things that we know is happening, is people are ordering a kit and sort of having it on hand for when they're ready. It's a tool in your medicine cabinet so that if you do become symptomatic or have an exposure to COVID, you have a test ready to go.
Okay, so when you order the test, you don't have to take that test right away. You can order that test through the Department of Homeland, Department of Health in Wisconsin, and then you could keep that in the event that you feel you may have been exposed and then have an opportunity for you to test without having to leave your own home.
Yep, that's correct. So having that test on hand ahead of time is one option. Of course, if you're symptomatic, it's also one of the options to go ahead and order that test. It comes in just a couple business days, and you can have that specimen collected and returned to you pretty quickly as well if you're already symptomatic.
Tracy, if you do take that test and you are worried about exposure and then you are waiting for the results, what's your best practices? What should I do in the meantime? I took the test because I was uncertain, and now I'm waiting for the results. What am I doing now?
Yeah, we really want to encourage anyone who has symptoms of COVID-19, first of all, to get a test. That's the first step, right? And while you're waiting for the results of those tests, to please stay home, isolate yourself from household members as well as much as possible. You really want to do everything you can to reduce the possibility that you might transmit COVID to others in the event that you are positive.
And as I started out, obviously, until vaccinations can become the norm, Tracy DeSalvo, we are counting on testing and tracing to try to contain this global pandemic. How have we done in testing and tracing? And whether we're talking locally, nationally, globally, how are we doing in containing this pandemic?
Well, we're certainly glad to see that the numbers have come down from the peak of where they were in the fall. And, you know, there's a lot of testing options available to Wisconsin residents. I think if you're someone in Wisconsin who has symptoms of COVID-19 or exposure, there's a lot of testing options available to you. You can certainly, as I said, go to your provider. You can go to one of our testing sites, our community testing sites, and we're glad to have these at-home testing options available as well. And we have a great public health system in Wisconsin with the State Department of Health Services and our local health department partners who are working really hard to do those case investigations and contact tracing investigations. And I'll put in a little plug that we also have an exposure notification app that's available now for Wisconsin residents, both on Apple and Android platforms. And you can activate that on your phone, and it can help to identify if you may have been exposed to someone who is a known case of COVID-19.
So we do have an app now that is available. I'd be curious to know more about this, Tracy, but let's take a moment here and with our guest, Tracy DeSalvo, who's the surveillance lead of the COVID-19 response team at the Wisconsin Department of Health. And I'd be interested in hearing from you this morning if you've ordered an at-home COVID-19 test and what the process was like for you, how long it took to get the results back, and how you're doing today. Most importantly, 1-800-642-1234. We'll continue our conversation with Tracy DeSalvo and take a look at the app that is now available, the free at-home testing kit that is now available for you this morning. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Our CDC found that the University of Wisconsin's rapid COVID-19 test missed almost 60% of the positive cases from people who weren't showing any symptoms. It's also known as an antigen test. These rapid tests also missed almost 20% of positive cases from people already showing symptoms. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and I've only taken the PCR test so far through the UW-Madison. That's the one with a cotton swab that goes up both nostrils. And those results have been proven to be more reliable. But what about the reliability of saliva via UPS and the opportunity for you to get a free at-home COVID testing kit right now? And you can hold on to that for when you need it. And if you've had this experience already of COVID testing and waiting for the results, share them. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to the studio. You can always email us, ideas@WPR.org. And our guest is Tracy DeSalvo. She's the surveillance lead of the COVID-19 response team at the Wisconsin Department of Health. And Tracy, as we look at, and we'll get to the app in a moment that's available to us now, but as we look at the free at-home COVID-19 testing kits, what we're looking at here is these COVID testing kits and test results. The rapid testing results seem to be less responsive. The PCR tests seem to be more responsive. What is this at-home saliva test kit? What kind of test is this for COVID?
Yep, this is also a PCR test, Lee. So okay. This is looking for that genetic material of the COVID virus.
So this would be the more reliable of the tests that are now available for COVID-19 tests.
Yep, PCR is generally considered the gold standard, although the antigen tests are good tests as well if used correctly.
In certain circumstances, as it's been explained to me, Tracy?
Yep, that's correct. Certainly for people who are symptomatic or who have a known exposure, they're very good tests, and there are good uses for them as well, sort of in population level screening. But as I mentioned, this at-home saliva test is a PCR test. So the main difference is that you're using a saliva sample rather than a nasal swab.
Thank you for that. And you can get your free at-home test right now from the Department of Health Services website, dhs.wisconsin.gov, or from the company that they are partnering with, Vault. And Tracy, as I go to the website, I do see a box there that says, please, if you had to enter your credit card in and your that you will not be charged at the end of this. And just as an effort to try to reduce barriers from people approaching getting these at-home free testing kits, explanation there you gave before, but again, if you have to put your credit card in, ultimately there will be no charge. If your health insurance company doesn't cover it, the state of Wisconsin will. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct.
So there will be no test or cost, even if you have to put in your credit card at some point as it goes. Now, onto this Wisconsin Exposure Notification app, Tracy. How did this get developed? How does it work?
Sure. So this is a great technology that was developed by Apple and Google, and it actually uses Bluetooth on your phone. So it's completely anonymous. Your phone, if you have the app downloaded or on Apple, you just have to turn it on in settings. If you have it activated on your phone and you have Bluetooth turned on, your phone actually will exchange anonymous Bluetooth keys with other phones when you're in close proximity. So it's when a phone is close to another phone. It doesn't exchange any information other than an anonymous key. And then if someone ends up being a case of COVID-19, they will get a code sent to them via text that they can enter into the exposure notification platform. And it will sort of scan their phone and identify keys of people who may have been exposed, right? They were within 6 feet for more than 15 minutes. And it will then notify those people anonymously that they have an exposure to someone. But no information exchanged about the person or who that might be. So it's completely anonymous. And we aren't tracking any of that data. Apple and Google don't track any of the data. It's just those anonymous Bluetooth keys that are stored on your phone.
Isn't this something that happens in the background of our phones, generally speaking, anyway? Aren't apps geocaching us wherever our phones go if we have our geolocation set or our GPS system turned on?
And I don't know a whole lot about that, but certainly, yeah, your phones can be doing that. But this is a little bit different because it actually doesn't use GPS.
Okay.
It's really only using those anonymous Bluetooth tokens. So all it's looking for is a phone that's in proximity. So their Bluetooth are sort of connecting to each other. It's not collecting any GPS data. So there's no information about where you were when the exposure occurred. It's really just you were within range. Your phone was within range of another phone. And so you have a contact.
Tracy, I would imagine that the effectiveness of that of this app, the Wisconsin Exposure Notification app, would be more dependent on how many people would be willing to employ it. That the more people that use it, the more effective it could be?
Absolutely, absolutely. So we have more than 1 million people who have registered and are using the app now. And we want to encourage, you know, anyone who is willing to please go ahead and turn that on your phone. Again, it's totally anonymous. And the more people we have, the more people have knowledge about possible exposures that they're having when they're out in the community.
Tracy DeSalvo, our guest, surveillance lead of the state's COVID-19 response team at our Department of Health Services. Let's go to Michael in Bear Valley. Michael, good morning. You're on the Ideas Network.
Hello. I took the test and came back negative. It was all went very smoothly. The one thing that I will mention about it, and then I have a question about how the test is going to be used, is you need to screw down the top after you deposit your saliva into the tube. And it really took quite a bit of strength, and I was concerned about elderly people being able to turn that thing down to activate the liquid on the top of the tube, which goes down into the saliva and fixes it in some way so that they can test the DNA. But other than that, I have a question about how the test is going to be used. The Department of Health Services has a daily tally of new cases. Do these tests get factored into it? And then my second question is, can we have reorder it so that we have it around to take another test? My feeling is the more people that are tested on a bi-weekly basis, the better chance we'll have of stopping outbreaks.
Michael, thank you. First, about the turning of the, and I wasn't entirely clear, Tracy, but it sounds like there could be some strength issues for those who are with this test.
Yeah, and I wasn't aware of that. So thanks, Michael, for sharing that feedback with us. And certainly, you know, I hope that as you are talking with the provider, they're able to talk you through that and help people to make sure that they're getting those tubes sealed tightly so that the test can be good and reliable.
And are those tests factored into the daily tally of cases and testing?
Yeah, because this is a PCR test, people who test positive would be considered a confirmed case of COVID-19. So they are included in that daily tally on the DHS website.
And Tracy, since Michael has taken this at-home test before and would like to have it available for him again, is that a possibility?
Yep, absolutely. You know, similar to community testing sites, you know, we want to make sure people have access to tests when they need them. So if you're symptomatic or if you have a known exposure, that's a great reason to be using these tests. And certainly having done one in the past would not be a reason why you couldn't be tested again in the future.
Let's go to John this morning. John, good morning. You're on the morning show.
Hello. Yeah, I just wanted to share an experience we had with them. My family and I went to the test kind of as a group, and I really liked the convenience of being able to order it ahead, just kind of have it on hand, because we had gone on a little trip over the holidays, and although we did our best to exposure and try to wear masks and social distance, we knew there was some risk of exposure, so we actually ordered the test while we were out of state on vacation. They were waiting for us when we got home, and then we just kind of gave ourselves a day or two to try to find the right timing, and then actually took the test. It just it was an extra layer of I don't know, security or confidence that you know, that we'd done all the right things when we were gone. And yeah, it was just really convenient that we were able to order. We did it at night. We took the test. It was probably 8-9 o'clock at night, and not having to maybe drive to a testing site or fall into their predetermined schedule.
John, I appreciate the story of the whole family getting the at-home free testing kit through the Department of Health Services. And Tracy DeSalvo, as we talk about what we're supposed to be doing and how we should implement best practices, I would imagine it still includes social distancing, it still includes masks, and now there are the opportunities to keep an at-home test kit available for you at home in the event that you would need it. And I could only imagine what that might mean for folks' mental health, for their own levels of anxiety. And now with the Wisconsin Exposure Notification app, there are a couple tools at our disposal that we could employ. And again, you hear that, well, it's nothing's a silver bullet in this pandemic, but everything helps. Well, a lot of these things help a little bit. Is that accurate? Or what's our best tact going forward?
I think you're absolutely right, Lee. And I really think, you know, we want to continue to emphasize the things we've been saying all along. Stay home as much as possible, limit your interactions with others, make sure you're wearing those masks when you're out in public, make sure you're maintaining physical distance as much as possible. And of course, wash your hands. Proper hand washing is also a really important way to prevent the spread of COVID-19. But we're glad to be able to add these additional tools to our toolbox to help people know when they may have an exposure with that Wisconsin Exposure Notification app, and to help people get tested at home or at a community testing site or at their provider, whatever works best for them.
How are we doing with contact tracing, Tracy?
I think, you know, we're doing a great job. We're working, we have a great team of contact tracers at DHS, and we're working in partnership with those local and tribal health health departments who are doing contact tracing and case investigation and really working to reach contacts around the state.
Do we have enough contact tracers?
I think, you know, at this point, we have a good amount of contact tracers in the state, and we're working hard to reach all those contacts. It's also really helpful if cases can help to notify their contacts as well, right? And that's part of the benefit of that exposure notification app.
The Wisconsin Exposure Notification app, now available for free. The at-home COVID-19 test, for which you will not be charged, now available through the Department of Health Services website, dhs.wi.gov. Tracy DeSalvo, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Lee.
Up next is news and a story from Wisconsin Life. Then we'll discuss Governor Evers' State of the State address delivered virtually last night. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The House of Representatives is expected to take up debate on an article of impeachment against President Trump today after 8. Wisconsin Public Radio is providing special coverage of this historic event on our NPR news and music stations and online at WPR.org. That's special coverage from NPR, expected to begin at 8. If you stay with us here on the Ideas Network, we'll be talking about the attack on the Capitol and what Congress does next, what we do next for that matter, and we welcome you to weigh in. That's coming up after 8 here on the Ideas Network. But first, here's Wisconsin Life and producer Maureen McCollum with a profile of a Milwaukee musician you should know.
Classic is an artist with many talents. The Milwaukee musician is a singer and multi-instrumentalist who creates unique modern soulful jazz compositions. He's won a number of awards over the last few years, including Best of Milwaukee Rap Hip-Hop Producer for 3 years in a row by the Shepherd Express. Aisha Jaffer tells us more about Classic's musical journey.
Classic's story begins surrounded by music.
Music for me began from birth of my parents always playing music for me in the car, in the crib. And then my musical journey started when I started playing the saxophone in the fourth grade.
He was a natural at the saxophone, which led him to a mentorship with Milwaukee jazz legend Berkeley Fudge. In addition to his time playing the sax with Fudge, Classic went through the Milwaukee public school system at Rufus King Elementary and Milwaukee High School of the Arts, surrounded by other creative students who helped develop his talent.
I've seen some things that you would find hard to believe. These ain't nightmares, these ain't dreams.
So I've been fortunate to be in a public schooling system that afforded us the opportunity to like make art all day and to pursue our passions. So that just did wonders for like confidence and just like creative freedom and just actually getting solid musical knowledge, but also not being restricted by that and like real world applications. So all of that like supremely shaped who I am as an artist today.
Everything Classic seems to touch is done with real intention and purpose. And this comes through in his songwriting process.
It was really instilled in me that music is a conversation. And in any good conversation, there are pauses and you leave room for responses. And you in turn respond to something.
In this time of unrest in our new normal, Classic has kept active and created a deeper body of work. A journal of this time, but also his progress as a musician in his new mixtape, Class Notes.
They are notes on what was going on. I mean, the song Everybody Free, which is probably like my favorite. There was a lot going on that felt not free or felt like there were a lot of restrictions and being mindful of certain oppression that was being highlighted and me reflecting on that.
Free from whatever it is. Get in the way. Don't get in the way.
Just after the release of Class Notes, Joey Grijalva, author of Images of America, Milwaukee Jazz, was captured by Classic sound and story and his intersections with the city of Milwaukee. Grijalva decided to reach out and start the process of writing the book on Classic.
This has been a transformative experience in and of itself. It's like my story, but it's like this interesting take of like using my story as also a vessel to tell different parts of the story of Milwaukee.
This story goes deeper, covering gun violence, trauma, loss, and also takes a look at anxiety, racism, and possibility. The book, The Milwaukeean, will be out February 2021.
People take time out of their day to digest from me. So it's got to be dope. It's got to say something. It's got to make you think. And it has to be honest. That's just like the criteria for, I think, everything that I do. I think my writing style is very stream of conscious. Conceptually, I can like flow from thing to thing pretty naturally because I'm just kind of following my life path and documenting it and hoping that people take something from that as well.
Aisha Jaffer brought us that story on Milwaukee musician Classic. She's a radio freelancer and storyteller who lives in Milwaukee. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And if you're looking for more on Classic, spelled K-L-A-S-S-I-K. Now, on the State of the State address and the Republican response last night, Governor Tony Evers gave his third State of the State address, and this year virtually. Following that, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss responded in kind. Although it was this year as if the venues for these speeches had been reversed. Instead of being in front of the members of the legislature, Governor Evers gave his address in front of a giant fireplace to an empty room.
We've made it through a difficult year, folks, and while it was discouraging, we aren't defeated. While it was trying, we're tough. Wisconsin, we've never been known for being timid. And we're sure not going to start today.
Following that, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss spoke to Republican members of the Assembly who were on hand in their own chamber, when the response to the governor had typically been held in the Assembly parlor. That's what you could see. But what did you hear last night? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call. Email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guest, Laurel White, State Capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, good morning.
Good morning.
Can we just start with the optics of last night? And was it me or were they inverted to what we were would typically expect from a State of the State and response address?
You're absolutely right. It was really unusual. This was the first virtual State of the State that Wisconsin has ever seen. We've obviously experienced a lot of firsts over the last 12 months or so in the state and across the country. It was very striking to me because normally a State of the State address is so much about kind of the ceremony and pomp and, you know, all of the guests, I think, that the governor brings in and kind of weaves into his speech. You see this with the president in the State of the Union, too, kind of calling out people in the crowd, special guests, using them to illustrate different stories of the past year, policy successes, things like that. That was really notably absent for me from the speech. And really the applause breaks that we're so used to in big ceremonial speeches like this were so noticeably absent from the governor's remarks. He kind of joked about that in the beginning of the speech, actually. He told folks, you know, this is going to go a lot faster because I'm not breaking for applause or for boos. I'm not as, you know, familiar with the boos. I feel like we don't hear those very often at all in State of the State addresses. But the speaker who did speak in the Assembly chamber, as you mentioned, had folks there. He had Republican members of the Assembly there. So he got some of those applause breaks and some of that more typical behavior for this sort of speech. And so that was really different, really unique this year.
And there was also a ceremony last night in the Assembly chamber recognizing the Assembly Speaker as the longest serving speaker in Wisconsin state history.
Yes, another sort of unusual twist for this year, obviously not something that happens every day or every year. They had a resolution that passed after the end of the speech and then Speaker Voss's response honoring his service in the state legislature. He is the, as of this year, the longest serving assembly speaker.
So just the optics itself seem to be a far cry from just 1 year ago. But on to the speeches themselves with our guest, Laurel White, this morning. And if you heard them, we'd take your reaction this morning at 1-800-642-1234. And Governor Evers spoke for about a half hour last night. And by and large, it seemed like the first half was focused on the state's response to the pandemic.
This past year asked a lot of us, and we've asked a lot of one another. But when we did, we found that the strength of our state is in what we're willing to face together, what we're willing to do for each other, especially when our neighbors need us the most.
What was your takeaway from the governor spending that first half of his address on the last 10 months of dealing with this global pandemic?
Well, it was obviously a huge presence in not only state government, but everyone's lives over the past year. So a big aim of the State of the State address is to kind of provide a summary of the year. Oftentimes it's, you know, it is a political speech. So it's a summary of accomplishments that the governor perceives his administration has been able to achieve, things with the legislature, et cetera. Because COVID was such a looming presence over state government over the past several months, I think it was fitting that he spent so much time speaking about it. You know, he had a moment of silence for those who've been lost. He spent a lot of time emphasizing, you know, the people that we've lost to this virus in the state are our neighbors, you know, mothers, fathers, siblings, aunts, uncles, teachers. And I think that that was a point that he really wanted to drive home, sort of the humanization of the virus. We know that as the numbers continue to climb in Wisconsin, it's easier to get a bit detached and hard to conceptualize. So I think that he was really trying to focus in on that. And also, you know, his sort of policy response to the virus. He did allude to the challenges that he's faced in getting executive orders and mandates related to the virus passed and staying in effect. We know there have been a lot of court battles over the past several months where Republicans have been pushing back on his orders. So he did talk about that. He said that he's really been limited in his response. And I think that that was an important highlight for him, too.
Here's what the governor had to say last night on the vaccine distribution in the state.
I know so many are ready to get vaccinated and get back to the life we knew it. And we're working to distribute the vaccine doses as quickly and as fairly as we can.
Laurel, what did the governor say about the state's vaccine rollout?
So that really was the majority of what he had to say about the rollout was that clip there. He didn't spend a lot of time on it. And I think that that's something that's very important to point out because vaccine rollout is really a major theme, I guess you could say, that Republicans are focusing on in the wake of the speech. So a big part of Speaker Voss's pushback when the speech was over was the administration's vaccine rollout. He said that the rollout hasn't gone fast enough. He criticized the governor's committees that are working on prioritizing who gets vaccinated when, sort of what those priority groups are. He pushed back specifically on the prioritization of inmates in Wisconsin to receive the vaccine before other populations of people. Other statements came out from, you know, from the majority leader, from the new assembly chair of the finance committee that's starting this year, all talking about vaccine rollout and saying that the governor bears responsibility for things not going as quickly as they have in a lot of other Midwestern states. So I think there's a real disconnect there between how much time the governor spent on vaccines in his speech and how much the Republicans are focusing on it in the response.
Laurel White, our guest. She is the Capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. She is also the co-host of WPR's Politics Podcast, which I do not miss. And if you heard the State of the State of the response last night, what was your takeaway? And what does this portend for 2021 in the state of Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to the studio. If you want to react or you've got a question for our Laurel White, we will continue the conversation with the governor and the response to the governor next on The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network. Let's get into the weeds. It was just hours before Governor Evers presented a virtual State of the State address last night, and just hours before the Assembly Speaker Robin Voss was given a chance to respond, that the Democratic governor announced a compromise on COVID-19 legislation, singling out and thanking the new Republican leader of the state Senate, Devin Lemieux. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent, and are we witnessing some bipartisanship in Wisconsin? Semi-bipartisanship? Halfway to bipartisanship? Well, if you listened to the governor and assembly speaker last night, I welcome your reaction this morning at 1-800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest, Laurel White, no better to direct us through the weeds of Wisconsin politics. So take us through the TikTok yesterday a little bit. We get the tweet from the governor announcing a compromise on COVID-19 legislation, singling out and thanking the new leader of the state Senate. And then we have the assembly speaker last night in his response to the state of the state calling for COVID-19 legislation coming from his chamber. How do you wade through these weeds?
Well, this really started last week when the assembly rolled out its COVID-19 proposal, made it AB1, you know, the first bill of the new legislative session, really placing an importance on it. Passed that bill that had several things that the governor doesn't agree with that had been surfaced in previous weeks, kind of as negotiations were ongoing. We knew that he wasn't a fan of several of these provisions. They did things like make it harder for schools to meet virtually. There would be more approvals in place, put limits on local health officials' powers. So we were waiting pretty anxiously to see what the Senate was going to do with this bill, even though it was likely to face a veto from Evers. What ended up happening was the Senate introduced its own proposal earlier this week, a pared down version of that assembly bill that eliminated a lot of those things that the governor disagrees with. And this is where you kind of see that bipartisan negotiation coming in. The governor really lauded the new majority leader, Devin Lemieux, for taking that step, for removing a lot of those things that he didn't like. The bill that passed the Senate just yesterday, shortly before the State of the State address, did include a couple things that the governor didn't include in his proposal. It provides liability protections for businesses, for example, even if they don't follow federal or state or local requirements aimed at limiting the spread of COVID-19. There's also a provision in there that allows essential visitors to nursing home residents. Those are new things. But the governor, as you mentioned, was very enthusiastic once that passed the Senate. He said that he was anxious to receive the bill to sign it, but it looks like it's facing a pretty major roadblock in the assembly. Speaker Voss did not speak too warmly of the proposal in his response to the State of the State last night.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And from the weeds to the tea leaves, Laurel White, what does this portend for the relationship between the two chambers, both controlled by Republicans, going forward in 2021?
Well, it's certainly not a rosy outlook right now. You know, the majority leader acknowledged that he had had some conflict, I think maybe that's the best word, with the assembly speaker last week, kind of because of how this has been rolled out. You know, the speaker said that the bill that passed the assembly had the support of the Senate, that it was drafted in concert with the Senate. So when there was this kind of apparent disconnect as the week went on, that created a unique situation. Now, I think it's really important to note that this isn't certainly unprecedented in Wisconsin. We've had disagreements between the Republican-controlled Assembly and the Republican-controlled Senate before. We saw that a little bit more, interestingly, when the Republican governor, Scott Walker, was in office. I think maybe there was just a little bit more room for disagreement. There's been a bit more unity sort of of the chambers against a Democratic governor since Evers took office, but we're really seeing a split here in how they want to work with Evers on COVID-19. I think that's very safe to say.
Laurel White, State Capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, our guest this morning, as and you as well at 1-800-642-1234. Mark in New Berlin, you're on the morning show. Good morning.
Hi. I might first mention that the Department of Health and Social Services has a link where you can comment on Phase 1B. And I can't believe that we don't even have Phase 1B defined. They're ending Phase 1A. Other states are having drive-by rollout, drive-by vaccinations for anybody over age 60. And we're talking about possibly including people over age 70 in these rollouts. This is ridiculous, and I don't think the state has planned for this. We knew a year ago that the federal government was sponsoring a vaccine. The president at the time, Donald Trump, and I know a lot of your viewers hate him, said that it would be out before the end of the year, and it was, and we aren't prepared to get it. We haven't even finished healthcare workers in the state. And I'd say, why not? What is the matter? But get on the link that's online for the Department of Health and Social Services to comment on what you would like to see in Phase 1B, the next phase that may roll out.
Thank you, Mark. And that echoes what the Assembly Speaker had to say in his response last night, that this vaccine rollout, I believe the Assembly Speaker's quote to the governor was, do your job.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that that's a great encapsulation of the Assembly Speaker's frustrations. And we're going to hear more about this week. The Assembly is actually holding a public hearing on Thursday to examine the state's vaccine rollout, to really look at the nitty gritty of what's happened so far, what plans are for the future. And I think to weigh in to the extent that they can on making some changes.
Let's move on to another issue that the state had to deal with all of last year, in part because of the pandemic, but the state's unemployment. In the state of the state, the governor said he would call the legislature into a special session to fix Wisconsin's unemployment system. Here, you'll hear him here. He calls the system broken and antiquated. That's all right. But in the Republican response, the Assembly Speaker pushed back, saying that the failures were not brought on by ancient systems, but rather by political leadership. So are we going to get any fixes for the Department of Workforce Development, Laurel, or is this another political football for 2021?
We're going to have to see. I mean, the response from Republicans was that the governor isn't taking enough personal responsibility for the backlog of unemployment claims. They said that he really shouldered a lot of the blame for that backlog and didn't do enough. It'll be interesting to see if they take up this special session call to address the unemployment system. We know that they haven't embraced previous special session calls from the governor on things like policing, elections, the dairy industry, gun laws. So it could be similar in that regard. But we know that this is an issue they've been concerned about. So we're just going to have to watch it really closely and see what happens.
Laurel White, the governor last night in the State of the State called this year the year of broadband access. But it seemed like there was a lot more on the state's radar with the speeches last night. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
WPR's Capitol reporter and the co-host of WPR's politics podcast, Laurel White, our guest. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show. This is the Ideas Network.